Thank you, Jonga in Blessing. Good evening, Zimbabwe. You are listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America on Friday, June the 19th, 2015. Thank you for joining us live from Washington. This is Sithandekile Mhlanga.
And I'm Jonga Kandemiri.
Here are our top stories this evening.
A shooting in the state of South Carolina in the U.S. brings attention to Zimbabwe's colonial past as Rhodesia and also apartheid South Africa are mentioned.
It's highly symbolic when it's coupled with various other things that he did or said. So Rhodesia and South Africa were brutally segregated countries, and those are the nations that he chooses of all the multitudinous nations in the world to put on his jacket.
Prosecutor General Johannes Tomana refutes accusations against him that courts should respect the rights of girls as young as 12 to get married.
I never say that girls under the age of 12 should and can have sex. I did not say that.
Oh. Zifa hits calls from soccer fans to drop gate charges for the anticipated Sunday game between Warriors and Comoros at Rufaro Stadium.
Yes, we have charged these gate charges to $2. Yes, our appeal for people to come in their large numbers.
These stories and much, much more coming up.
What has been this?
Zimbabwe and South Africa have come into the spotlight after the use of their colonial flags by a 21-year-old American, Dylan Stromroof, arrested for allegedly killing 9 people, a historical black church in South Carolina. Many conclude that Roof's choice of flags are indicative of his belief in white supremacism. Blessing Zulu has more.
What has been described as one of the most tragic incidents in America related to the fight for civil rights somehow brought into the spotlight former Rhodesia and apartheid South Africa, two countries in colonial Africa that were the poster children of racism, with the late rebel Prime Minister Ian Douglas Smith in Rhodesia and Piet Willem Botha in South Africa. Dylan Roof, who is now in police custody, proudly displayed the flags on his jacket in a picture he posted on his Facebook page. The memories of Zimbabwe's colonial past does not bring up the best of memories for many, including Senior Minister of State and ZANU-PF spokesman Ambassador Simon Kayamoyo, who recalls it as so brutal that it forced the blacks to wage a war of liberation.
ZANU went through a very, very protracted liberation struggle because we were fighting against white supremacy and secularism. And of course, we had to take up arms because we were considered subhuman, but we defeated the enemy, of course, through the efforts of also our friends from various countries, particularly Russia and China and many other countries.
Legendary musician Thomas Mapfumo, who now lives in the U.S. and was jailed by the Smith regime for the criticism of the colonial system, concurs with Moyo, remembering how Africans who were treated as second-class citizens lived.
Life was hard. I mean, during the white man's rule, was tough. Everything was just tough. There was a lot of racism, a lot of segregation. So you can get the money, but if there's segregation, you're not free. There's no freedom. That's why people had to revolt and fight against the colonial rule.
But why are symbols of Rhodesia and apartheid still being used? In the U.S., where the civil rights movement was winning historic victories, white supremacists saw the viciously racist Rhodesian government as a victory worth celebrating. By 1976 court, there was a sprawling proliferation of pro-Rhodesian organizations in the United States. University of Houston historian Gerald Horn writes, "The transatlantic question of race was the essential glue that held the lobby together." Brian Levine, director of the Center for the Study of Hate and Extremism and an associate professor at California State University, San Bernardino, speculates over Roof's use of the racist symbols.
Well, I think it's highly symbolic when it's coupled with various other things that he did or said. So, Rhodesia and South Africa were brutally segregated countries. And those are the nations that he chooses of all the multitudinous nations in the world to put on his jacket. Plus, he was posing with a Confederate flag.
Washington-based human rights lawyer Doug Coltart concurs with Levine.
The use of the apartheid South African flag and the Rhodesian flag is indicative of the legacy of white supremacy and racism that we have historically in both South Africa and Zimbabwe, and that is an awful aspect of our past that we are still working through the ramifications of even today.
Levine also says South Carolina is home to many hate groups.
There are certainly hate groups in South Carolina, but I think, you know, today, one of the things that we have to understand is that the old brick-and-mortar membership hate group is a bit anachronistic, and that is, today, people who have hate proclivities can do that on their own without joining a hate group. So hate groups today operate much more as vessels of ideology than actually membership-driven entities like they used to be.
Human Rights Watch researcher Dewama Vinga says lack of gun control laws in America is also fueling the violence.
It's about the control of guns. It is about ensuring protection, which is unlike many other countries where they are stronger and stricter controls on how someone can get access to guns and ammunition and how those are used.
The shooting in South Carolina is among many in America that continue to spark debate about access to guns. United States President Barack Obama, remarking on the incident yesterday, attributed this to poor gun control.
I've had to make statements like this too many times. Communities like this have had to endure tragedies like this too many times. We don't have all the facts, but we do know that, once again, innocent people were killed in part because someone who wanted to inflict harm had no trouble getting their hands on a gun.
Charleston County Coroner Ray Wooten identified the victims as follows: Cynthia Hurd, 54, Susie Jackson, 87, Ethel Lance, 70, Reverend DePayne Middleton Doctor, 49, Honorable Reverend Clementa Pickney, 41, Taiwanza Sanders, 26, Reverend Daniel Simmons Sr., 74, Reverend Sharonda Singleton, 45, and Mira Thompson, 59. South Carolina's Governor Nikki Haley has urged prosecutors today to seek the death penalty for the suspect gunman. Reporting for Studio 7 in Washington, this is Blessing Zulum.
Meanwhile, civil rights activist Clay Omowale, who is also a spokesman for the December 12 Movement International Secretariat, which fights for black people's rights worldwide, tells Studio 7 that Dylan Roof subscribes to white supremacist ideologies because they are still shared by some sections of the white race, especially in America.
There's always been a marriage between the racist ideologies in Africa by European settlers and the racist ideology of European settlers in North America. You know, and that ideology is built on this, that people of color, particularly of African ancestry, are not human beings and therefore do not have to be treated as human beings. Many people in the South continue to relate back to the Confederacy. In fact, the governor of South Carolina has always advocated and been proud of the fact that the Confederate flag can still fly in the capital of South Carolina. These are the kinds of conditions that have nourished a young man like this. We will see what happens in the so-called courts of justice in the United States.
As someone who has visited Africa, including Zimbabwe, do you think this country's colonial history is widely known?
Absolutely. Very well known, because the ideologies are the same. And it's also in terms of what their parents and what the schools continue to teach in that regard. So it's not accidental that he has a Confederate insignia and he has a Rhodesian insignia, because to him, those two symbols are symbols of white supremacy and symbols of the fact that African people are not fully human beings and are there to be exploited. When slavery ended in the United States, no one ever asked the ex-slaves what should their relationship be. It was forced on us, and all forcing on us did was strap us down with decades and decades of continued exploitation and racist attacks like what took place. We have never had equality in this country. The same question of black people dying because they are black because of poor health care, being shot down in the street by the quote.
What is your outlook for the future?
I take great encouragement, and have always had, from our African brothers and sisters who have fought for their liberation from apartheid and colonialism in countries like Zimbabwe.
That was civil rights leader Clay Omowale of the 12th December Movement International Secretariat on the line with Studio 7 from New York.
Prosecutor General Johannes Tomana is denying accusations made in the state-controlled Herald and Chronicle that he said 12-year-old girls can be legally married or consent to sex. The disputed reports quote Tomana saying courts should respect the rights of the young girls if they get married and start a life. Tomana tells Studio 7 the reports are irresponsible.
It's unfortunate that nobody cared to verify that with me first before issuing such a serious statement to the citizens of this country. If you go back to the record, you'll notice that I never say that girls under the age of 12 should and can have sex. I did not say that. I know or should know that the law says that they can't consent to sex. Why should such a serious statement be founded on a lie? Such a big, serious, grave lie. It's because, in my view, somebody is serious to undermine the institution of the National Prosecuting Authority, the institution of the Prosecutor General. Somebody wants to foment insecurity in the people of Zimbabwe to actually attack a law enforcement institution with such a lie, in such a manner as to actually attract, you know, a citizen's common demand that Tomana should quit right away because he is a pervert. I agree that no country should have a pervert as their prosecutor general. I agree.
But did you grant this interview where you are being quoted? And if so, what exactly did you explain to them?
Well, the reason why I answered you the way I did and repeated the law is because I wanted you firsthand to understand what it is that I actually said. By the way, nobody has ever asked me what I was doing in Bulawayo. And by the way, I was in Bulawayo to assess the state of affairs of your prosecuting authority. Why? Because it needs to be able to uphold the Constitution's mandate, which is to prosecute on behalf of Zimbabwe as effectively as possible so that the people of Zimbabwe are able to enjoy their constitutional rights.
That was Prosecutor General Johannes Tomana in Harare with Studio 7. Despite Tomana's denial of the accusations, organizations that defend children's rights, including the Roots Community Organization led by Beatrice Savage, say they are not convinced and will proceed with planned demonstrations against Tomana next Tuesday.
As an organization that's working to protect the rights of children, we are really saddened by the utterances and shocked and angry at the utterances that are being said to have been made by the Prosecutor General, Mr. Tomana. These remarks are very retrogressive when, as a nation, we're trying to move forward. And recently, we had the AU summit where the president was talking about the need to end child marriage in his opening remarks.
What are you planning to do with this? Are you planning to meet with Mr. Tomana or you are planning something?
We have made efforts to meet Mr. Tomana today, which were not fruitful. But what we have done is that the civil society organizations working on child protection in Zimbabwe, we have gathered today and produced a statement, which we have shared with the media. And we are also going to take it to Mr. Tomana's office, as well as the Minister of Justice and the Ministry of Gender, so that we need a response from these ministries and from Mr. Tomana's office. In the statement, actually, we call for Mr. Tomana to just step down.
That was Roots Community Organization Director Beatrice Savage in Harare.
The Zimbabwe Tourism Authority's 7th annual Sanganani World Tourism Expo at the Harare Conference Center entered its second day today with an official opening by Chief Executive Officer Karikoka Kaseke of the Zimbabwe Travel Association and other stakeholders. The expo, normally held later in the year, was moved forward to June after several suggestions from buyers saying it will better market Zimbabwe as a tourist destination. And according to officials, the move is paying off. Reporter Tatenda Kumbo spoke to ZTA's National Convention Managing Director Tessa Chikaponya, who says the expo is going beyond expectations of the tourism authority, especially after a quick turn around from the last expo.
I think Sagana is meeting its expectation. We repositioned in 2014 and we're in the second day of the reposition Sagana. We're actually focusing on business to business, and I think we are achieving that. We cannot say it's 100%. It's work in progress, but it's working out very well. And we are quite pleased with the progress that we've had over years, and the quality of stands are very, very high, together with the quality of business conducted.
And how has the turnout been, of course, as you're talking about the caliber of business people and attendees you've had this year?
We have 110 buyers over and above what we had last year. Last year we had 66 buyers and 10 media, but this year we've got 110 buyers and then 27 media. We are hoping to grow this to get more buyers and more exhibitors. You can actually see that most source markets are now softening, and looking at the caliber of buyers, it shows that people have an interest of dealing with Zimbabwe. Last year, they actually pleaded with us to say we should change your Sanganai to an earlier month, which is the first half of the year, because they want to package us.
And with that change, of course, as you're having this expo now in June, how has that fared?
Yes, true. It is giving us a good residual. And looking at the period for preparing for this, with the shortest period, but we can see that we have lots of results that have come out of this.
That was Zimbabwe Tourism Authority's National Convention Managing Director Tessa Chikaponya at the Harare Conference Center.
You are listening to Studio 7 for Zimbabwe from the Voice of America in Washington.
Studio 7 can be found on the 4930, 5930 and 15455 kHz shortwave frequencies. We also broadcast on 909 medium wave or AM frequency.
Coming up,
Zimbabwe fans anticipate a Warriors victory over Comoros.
And Zifa acknowledges financial problems due to lack of donors.
We have slashed these charges to $2 to rest of ground, and for grandstand and for VIP, the charges remain the same. So we appeal to the nation, to the fans, to everyone, even there in America, for you to come in your large numbers and support the national team.
Stay tuned.
But first, a look at regional and international news.
A new report says repealing the controversial Obamacare law expanding access to health insurance in the United States would raise costs by $137 billion, leaving 19 million people uninsured and slightly increase economic growth over 10 years.
U.S. President Barack Obama will travel to Ethiopia next month, becoming the first sitting American leader to visit the African country. The White House said the visit to Addis Ababa will come after a previously announced trip to Kenya. While in Ethiopia, President Obama will meet with government officials and hold talks separately with leaders of the African Union. Mr. Obama's trip to his father's homeland of Kenya will also be his first as president.
You are listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America in Washington.
In our sports segment, the Zimbabwe Football Association, or ZIFA, has some good news for fans ahead of a crucial game at Rufaro Stadium between Zimbabwe and Comoros. ZIFA spokesperson Kolani Gwesela says they heard their fans' calls.
Zimbabwe Football Association, ZIFA, would like to inform the Football Federation of the Nation that it has slashed get charges for Sunday's match against Comoros. Initially, the match was pegged at $3 for rest of ground, $5 for VIP for grandstand, and $10 for VIP. But I would like to assure the Football Fraternity that we have slashed these charges to $2 to rest of ground, and for grandstand and for VIP, the charges remain the same. So
So we appeal to the nation, to the fans, to everyone, even there in America, for you to come in your large numbers and support the national team as we clash against the Comoros. We are confident of a victory, and the victory can only come when you guys come in your large numbers.
So where was this confusion emanating from, Mr. Gwesela?
Yes, as I have said, I can confirm that initially we had paid those get charges at $3. But having realized that people, their disposable incomes had gone down, and there are also liquidity crunch within the economy, we have seen $2 to be affordable for the members of the fraternity. Yes, we also want to create an intimidating atmosphere at the Rufara when you clash against the Comoros, and we want people to come in direct numbers. Yes, we have slashed these charges to $2. Yes, our appeal for people to come in direct numbers.
We are also hearing of problems that are bedeviling the Warriors, and there was no certainty that this Zimbabwe-Comoros match will kick off because of financial problems until well-wishers chipped in. What's exactly the problem that Zifa is facing?
Yes, I can confirm that Zifa is broke. The association has been facing a number of liquidity challenges, owing that one, Zifa itself is an organization that does not generate any income. It has to survive on the benevolence of the government and the various stakeholders. We have said it and we continue to say that problems that are bedeviling Zifa have to do with sponsorship. We have been unable to secure sponsorship for this national team. As you are aware, football worldwide survives and thrives because of government sponsorship. But this is not happening in Zimbabwe.
That was Zifa spokesperson Kolisani Gwesela.
Zifa's reduction in gates fees has come as good news for Zimbabwe's football family, which, anticipating a goal harvesting against Comoros in the Warriors' 2016 African Nations Championship qualifier on Sunday. Reporter Michael Kariati tells us why.
With Rufaro Stadium expected to be packed Sunday due to the gate fee reduction by the Zimbabwe Football Association, all eyes are now on Warriors coach Calisto Pasua to deliver. The football family predicts an easy win for the Warriors over the Comoros in the first of their 2016 African Nations Championship qualifiers. The Comoros are considered one of the weakest footballing nations in Africa. Among the hopefuls is Dynamo's football club supporter Reginald Mukandawire.
I think the Warriors are going to win 3-1.
Harare City Football Club follower Masimba Chidewe is counting on the Warriors to score more than 2 goals.
3-0 is not bad.
Not everyone, however, has brought into the goal harvest reap expected of the Warriors, with Warriors fan club member Brian Mkoki cautioning against an easy victory against little-known Comoros. The Warriors need a healthy first leg lead ahead of the return leg in the Comoros in 2 weeks' time.
Every game is a new game, but Zimbabwe, we have to fight hard. We have to fight hard to win.
Pasua has called 5 of the players who played against Malawi to add guile to his squad. The Warriors have qualified for all the past 3 editions of the African Nations Championships since the CHAN was introduced in 2009. The African Nations Championships, which are known as CHAN, will be held in Rwanda from January 16 to February 7. Reporting for Studio 7 in Harare, this is Michael Kariati.
But Abdu Shaku Abod of VOA Swahili Service, who is originally from Comoros, says the team could surprise Zimbabwe.
Comoros is one of the smallest and probably the last team to join in Africa, because Comoros is so small, a lot of problems. Number one, infrastructure, lack of facilities, lack of good trainers, and all that has made Comoros a very, very difficult place to play football.
But then, you know, when it comes to competition, the odds have been known to be beaten. So Comoros seems as though it's already expected to completely be disseminated by Zimbabwe's Warriors.
I don't think so. Comoros has shown very good capabilities in the last games. I think so. This is the second time Comoros is going to African Cup since Blatter. Blatter helped a lot, the Comoros, with a new stadium and all that. But what is interesting about Comoros, we have talented players in France. So whenever there's a match like this, we bring our France players down to Comoros and they play. That's what I've observed recently, and that makes a big difference.
So, of course, this game is going to be in Zimbabwe, the Rufaro Stadium. So you're saying that there are going to be some of Comoros' international players in that team?
I think it'll be possible because it's the holiday period. Most of them have come home for vacation. So if they are there, then it is going to be an interesting match. If not, then probably there is a possibility they will lose.
So what's your guess of what the score will be? Some might think it'll be 20-0.
No. I don't think so. That at all. Come on. 20-0. It has never been. But I have a thought that it'll be like 2-1 or 3-1, not more.
Okay, Abdul Shakur Abud. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
That was Abdul Shakur Abud of VOA Swahili Service, who is originally from Comoros.
Now, here's an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
It is all well and good to have legal guarantees of human rights, including freedoms of speech, assembly, and religion. But without the legal institutions to enforce such rights in the communities where most people live, these rights rarely become reality, said U.S. Assistant Secretary of State for Democracy, Human Rights, and Labor, Tom Malinowski. In many African countries, access to justice is hampered by too few courts and legal professionals, too long a distance between communities and institutions of justice, too little knowledge about the content of the law, and by corruption that breeds distrust of the justice system. Mali, for instance, has 300 lawyers for a population of 15 million. The majority of them live in Bamako, so despite laws providing for free legal aid, if you're a poor person upcountry, you don't have much of a chance to get it. That's why the United States is supporting the African Center for Justice and Mobile Courts. The interconnectedness of the world means that even people in remote and impoverished areas have a greater sense of their rights. A case in point is a widow and mother of three young girls in the Democratic Republic of the Congo. After her husband's death, her in-laws threw her and her children out of their home. The mother found her way to a legal aid clinic that was able to point her toward Congolese laws supporting equal treatment of male and female children, and with the clinic's help, she and her daughters were able to return to their home. Access to justice doesn't just mean access to courts, said Assistant Secretary Malinowski. It means access to information and to government services from a government that is responsive to their needs. And the most responsive governments are those that are freely elected by citizens and that respect term limits in office. The United States wants to see systems of governance and justice that focus on citizens and that work for and empower the poorest people in society. This is the right thing to do. It's also the smart thing to do if you want to build stable, peaceful, prosperous, and just societies.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Remember to stay tuned for Studio 7 Live Talk when our hosts and you, the listeners, will be talking about the CHAN soccer match between Zimbabwe's Warriors and Comoros at Rufaro Stadium on Sunday.
To join the discussion, text us at 001-202-465-0318 so we can call you back from our studios. That was Cholocho Great Sounds, Impilo Yalamhlanje. You will hear more from Cholocho Sounds in the oncoming Ndebele show with Ntungameli Nkomo.
And now to recap today's top stories.
A shooting in the state of South Carolina in the U.S. brings attention to Zimbabwe's colonial past as Rhodesia and also apartheid South Africa are mentioned.
Prosecutor General Johannes Tomana refutes accusations against him that courts should respect the rights of girls as young as 12 to get married.
That's all we have for today. This is Sithandekile Mhlanga in Washington.
And I'm Jonga Kandemiri, wishing you a pleasant evening and a very good night.